The animated series Tuca and Bertie stars two best friends in the classic odd couple tradition. Tiffany Haddish voices Tuca, a loud, proud, live-for-the-moment free spirit. And Ali Wong voices Bertie, who is timid, anxious, and racked with self-doubt.
That setup may sound familiar, but the setting isn't. Tuca and Bertie are birds, and they live in a surreal world pulsing with color and sex and drugs and plant people. When it debuted back in 2019, Tuca and Bertie developed a rabid fan base, but Netflix canceled it after one season. Now it's found a new home on Adult Swim. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Tuca and Bertie on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc. Teladoc is here for you with 24/7 access to board-certified doctors who can diagnose and treat non-emergency conditions like sinus infections, allergies, rashes, and more. And Teladoc's doctors can, where authorized, call in a prescription to be filled at the pharmacy of your choice. Download the app today or visit teladoc.com/NPR.
Welcome back. You just met Aisha Harris. Also with us from her home in the Bay Area is Ingu Kang. She's the TV critic at The Washington Post. Welcome back, Ingu.
Hi.
Great to have you, as always. Tuca and Bertie was created by writer and cartoonist Lisa Hannawalt, who designed the characters on BoJack Horseman. And if you know her work, you know that Tuca and Bertie seems like a natural extension of her sensibility and her obsessions. Bodies, both their functions and their fluids, animals, bugs, plants, sex, relationships. She loves making the grotesque cute and the cute grotesque, which is one of many things that sets Tuca and Bertie apart. Yes, there's a kind of manic energy to all those swirling colors and shapes and surreal asides, but at heart, this is a very funny show about a very real friendship between two adult women, well, bird women, who deal with very real, very adult problems, anxiety, STDs, sexual harassment, intimacy, and much, much more. And then there's that voice cast. As we mentioned at the top, you've got Tiffany Haddish as Tuca and Ali Wong as Bertie, but there's Bertie's kinda nice, kinda boring boyfriend Speckle, voiced by Steven Yeun, and the cast is rounded out by folks like Nicole Byer, Richard E. Grant, Jennifer Lewis, John Early, Reggie Watts, and many, many others. Now, full disclosure, I'm in the tank for this show. It was what was making me happy when it debuted back in 2019. Aisha, what do you think of Tuca and Bertie?
I am also very firmly in the tank for the show. I was extremely depressed when it was announced that it had been canceled on Netflix after one season. To me, I think it's definitely, I remember watching the first one or two episodes of the first season and being like, what is this? This show is weird. I'm not sure if I dig it. But by episodes 3 or 4, as the story went on and we saw the ways in which these characters deal with so many issues that young 20-something, 30-somethings deal with, whether it's codependency on one another as a friendship, which is a huge theme of this season, and it was a big theme of last season as well, and dealing with just feeling lost in your own career path, in your own personal life, what you're going to do with yourself. I love seeing it rendered in such a colorful, weird, quirky way. And I think that both Ali Wong and Tiffany Haddish are doing really, really great voice work because, I mean, Tiffany Haddish especially has a very distinct way of speaking. And it's not as though Tiffany Haddish is doing anything too different from what she usually does in her live action performances. But I think like the fact that she's a toucan is fun to hear her voice coming out of this like giant bird and the way in which they attack these deliveries and these lines and really just feel like actual friends, I think can be hard to render, especially when you're casting quote unquote famous people who aren't necessarily the typical voiceover people. I think it's great to see this. So I will say there have only been 4 episodes so far available to press. So out of 10 for this season. But I really like the direction that the season is going in, and I am just excited to see where else it goes because there's just so many fun new voices that are thrown in here, and there's also some old voices. Nicole Byer, love her. Mm-hmm. She is in almost every single episode, and you can tell, like, she also has a very distinct voice, and she pops up as all these different animals, and I'm always, like, I've gotten to the point now where I'm just listening for her and waiting to hear, like, when is she going to pop
me
up?
Me too.
So Nicole Byer, to me, is, like, one of the MVPs of the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you also note that I do think it's going in a more serialized direction, which I think the first season did as well, but this is more linear and defined, and we're seeing their relationships develop and them trying to get better. Ingu, what do you make of this series?
I am unfortunately also in the tank for this series, and therefore you are not going to get any drama from me. I love this show so much. I think that when it came out, I wrote a review for Slate, and I said it was something like Broad City meets BoJack Horseman.
Exactly.
Which is a very common descriptor, I realize, after Googling.
Yeah.
So not in any way an original observation on my part, but it's one of those shows where it so feels like a very specific person's very specific vision. And just getting to live in that person's head for 20 minutes at a time is just a thrilling experience. And I think the show has gotten a lot of accolades for its thematic ambitiousness, especially when it comes to issues like sexual harassment. And I don't think that it has even gotten enough accolades just like in that regard. I think that the show sort of came out toward the end of Me Too, and it just sort of like seemed like this like amazingly rich and complicated complement to the movement, even though it was obviously conceived of like much before. And yeah, I think that one of the reasons why the visual silliness of the whole thing works so well is that Lisa Hanawalt is so inventive with her metaphors. Mm-hmm. There's a new one that's introduced in the premiere where she meets with a bunch of therapists and she says, "I feel like a haunted house." And then you see her rendered into a haunted house.
Birdie, why don't you let me in and we can talk?
No. I'm a burden. You don't want a rotten old house full of banshees and babadooks.
Maybe Speckle and Tuca like helping you.
Huh? Dr. Joanne?
They love you because of who you are. You don't have to fix yourself before letting them in.
Birdie!
And then over the course of the episode, they really dive in literally into the haunted house and try to figure out like what it means for a person to feel like a haunted house. Mm-hmm. And I think one of my pet peeves generally with animated shows are basically like shows that could be done as a live action show. I don't understand the point of having an animated show if you're not going to take advantage of the medium of animation. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of another show that like goes more gung-ho into all of its surreal possibilities than this show.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point because the nature of this animation is so high energy that when their inner lives kind of spill out into the real world, it's all of a piece. It all feels like it's part of this show. I just love Hanawalt as a creator. Y'all should check out Baby Geniuses, the podcast she does with the comedian Emily Heller. I reviewed several of her books over the years, and because of that, that is why I think I find this show so heartening. It doesn't feel like what you both mentioned, this very specific idiosyncratic point of view is getting watered down at all. It's just given new life. These designs are familiar, and the character of Tuca comes from her books. And here, we watch how they move. Tuca and Birdie move through the world in very different ways that characterizes them. And as far as the humor goes, I think that a show like BoJack Horseman has, you know, a lot of emotional depth, but it also has jokes, like things you could pull out of the dialogue and quote, and it would be funny no matter who's saying them. One of the reasons I think Broad City gets brought up so much is that these jokes are funny, but they grow out of these relationships and these characters. Like, when somebody says something, it's funny because it's Birdie saying that, or it's funny because it's Tuca saying that, and it so comports with everything you know about them. It's just of a piece.
Yes, yes. I especially love the the sex bus in the first episode where Tuca is trying to, she realizes that she's putting all of her energy into her relationship with Birdie and she needs to figure out what she wants to do with her own life, including her personal life. And she's tired of like online dating. So she's like, I'm going to create a reality show on a bus. And she calls it a sex bus.
Welcome to Sex Bus, a non-televised, non-film reality dating show. All of you have an equal chance of winning, except you. I hate to do this.
Well, screw you, Tookaloo. Come on. I'm a great lady.
Ew, it's your personality. Blah. It's all bad. You're eliminated. But, silver lining, I need a bus driver. You're hired.
Maybe.
And I just love the way in which she like finds ways to cut people off the bus and at some point landing on one person left on the bus. But then other events happen that make that relationship kind of fizzle. And I think it's really interesting to see that because it's another outgrowth of her character not being ready for the things that she's trying to throw herself into. Another running gag is that she, in order to deal with her issues, she says them into a jar or a cup and then leaves them behind her toilet with like a little note of what she's like put aside and she's not going to deal with. And I love that visual and the way in which that just feels like Tuca. We know Tuca so well. This is what she does. She runs away from her problems. And Birdie does the same thing, but she does them in her own unique way too. So yeah, all of those little jokes and dialogue and the way in which they interact are all just so very, very specific.
Yeah. Let's talk about Speckle, who's voiced by Steven Yeun. There is another version of the show which is just mean to that character. And there is something gentle about how the show treats him, and it respects his relationship with Birdie, even if it's pointing out some of its flaws. This just strikes me as a much more nuanced and adult relationship than I would expect from a show where somebody's fanny pack talks to them. You know what I mean?
The fanny pack barks. The fanny pack.
Right. The fanny pack is a dog.
Get it right, Glenn.
I think in many ways, Speckle is, you know, he's like an architect. And I think that they get a lot of mileage out of the fact that architects are, sorry for all of the architects out there, boring. And they think about boring stuff all day. And I think that the character is sort of meant to be a little bit boring. You can tell that he's just sort of this like bastion of stability that Birdie both wants to flock to, no pun intended, and also is really afraid of settling down for. So I don't think he's like much of a character. He's more sort of like a symbol, right? But he does get a lot of fart jokes.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a degree of complexity here that's really fascinating. And again, it's not something you would expect from a show that presents so wild and over the top. And that's a thing that's striking me about this particular season. We've only seen the first four episodes, but they are working on themselves in a way that they didn't necessarily do in the first season. And, you know, wallowing in brokenness is funny. A show like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, those characters are broken. They're going to stay broken. But on a show like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the first season is broken funny, and then she begins the process of working on herself. It stays funny, but it becomes funny in a different way. What do you guys think of how this show is developing things like Birdie going to see a therapist and Tuca finally addressing all those cups, those thousands and thousands of cups behind her toilet?
I was really surprised by how closely they are moving on from storylines from season one. I was sort of expecting them to do slightly different things, and they're really continuing the plotline of Pastry Pete. Mm-hmm. They're really going directly from the sexual trauma storyline that Birdie had gone through in season one and going directly into a season premiere episode that's all about the difficulty of finding a good therapist. And so I'm often of the mind that it's so much funnier and like so much more entertaining watching, as you said, Glenn, broken people be broken, that if that's the way that the show wanted to keep going, I would have been probably fine with that. But it's going to be interesting to see how they try to make repeated comedy out of self-improvement, which I think is much harder. But I think if there's five creators, maybe that like I'm really interested in like their perspectives on how one becomes a better person, someone so closely associated with BoJack Horseman is definitely going to be on that list.
Sure. That's a good point. You know, this show didn't just change networks. It's changed distribution systems. The first season, if you want to watch it, is all on Netflix, but they're dropping season two's 10 episodes once a week, Sunday nights. How is that going to change how you receive this show, if at all? What do you think?
I do think now we're in this age of binging, and I think with something like this, I think it really benefits from binging. I watched all four of these new episodes back to back in one sitting, and I'm pretty sure I watched all of the first season the first time around in maybe two sittings. But the more time you spend with these characters in one sitting, I think the more you will benefit from, because there are so many through lines that are connecting it, and there are so many like callbacks and references to, you know, past things and other relationships. And so I wonder if maybe people would benefit from just like waiting until at least a couple have dropped and then kind of watch those back to back. That would be my suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Counterpoint.
Yes, yes.
This show is extremely frenetic and at times I find it sort of exhausting to watch. I think this is a show that benefits from breaks. I don't think that you necessarily have to watch like one episode per week, but it is like a show that sort of teaches you how to watch it in a sense, mm-hmm. because it has like such a like relentless rhythm to it. I think that at least if you're a complete newbie, like giving yourself this space to like watch it sporadically, I think it's like more than necessary almost. I do think that there is something a little bit lost in that move from Netflix to Adult Swim. The very first image of the show, like in the pilot, is these like really beautiful, really bouncy blue boobs that are attached to the side of a building. And you have like the theme song play. And then you just have these like boobs like swaying in the wind with joy. And they got rid of it. But it is like a very body positive, body forward show. And I think Netflix was able to have that. And there was something very healing to me about sort of like both the exploration of sexual trauma and just sort of seeing the body in its like most natural state. And the fact that like you're sort of losing out on all of those nipples really kind of made me sad. So I'm going to say that. The other thing that I wanted to ask you guys was, do you feel like these characters are racially coded and that, like, race plays a role on the show?
Ooh, that's such a good question.
That's a very good question.
I've thought about this, and I think when it comes to the way they've cast the voices, it is, because you have the Aunt Tallulah character, Chuka's aunt, being played by the fabulous, amazing Jennifer Lewis. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's part of what I like about the show, is that even knowing both of the women, the actual actresses' racial backgrounds, to me, they feel like they could be played by anyone, but not in a weird, like, colorblind, like, these people have no culture, but in just a... Wow, this is a good, I've thought about it a lot, and I guess I haven't come down to an actual answer.
Well, this is the thing. A, it's very nuanced, and B, it's very messy. This show, in terms of its systems, are very messy. If you try to do a taxonomy of the show, this person is playing this person, and, you know, plant people mean X. Like, it confuses me very, very quickly. But Nicole Byer does voice, among many voices, this, in the second episode of the second season, a very kind of valley girl who is coded white, privileged, you know, Laguna Beach kind of valley girl. So, yeah, there's a resonance there that I didn't pick up on initially.
I will add, I don't think I've ever seen, or at least off the top of my head, there are very few Black live action characters, or even like actual Black animated characters, who are as like lost and flighty in the way that Tuca is. Mm-hmm. The one reference point I can think of is like Cree Summers' character on A Different World, Freddie. Like, that's like the one like Black reference point I can think of where it's just like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, or I'm very...
Wow, the Hillary Banks erasure.
Fair, but Hillary Banks is more of a valley girl, right? And she also, like, for a lot of that show, she wasn't actually trying to find herself. She was happy being... like, daddy, give me money. So yeah, I think that there's some coding going on there, but I think it's part of what makes it so successful is the fact that it's not, there aren't, as Glenn said, these one-to-one comparisons to be made between the people who are voicing these characters and whoever the animated version is supposed to represent.
How about you, Inga? What do you think?
I asked the question because I also go back on this a lot. I think that there is, as Aisha said, sort of this like very productive ambivalence, or like this like ambiguity, mm-hmm. to the racialization of the characters. You can take them as completely aracial or like completely non-racial. And I think that the show works in that sense. I think that the reason why I have spent a lot of time thinking about this probably has to do with the state of Asian American representation in general. And when I was watching the first season, I remember sort of being reminded how few stories there are of both like Asian American stories as they relate to mental health and also to sexual trauma. And it sort of made me think about like why there was that particular scarcity and how much I really like appreciated Tuca and Birdie for sort of kind of having that. But then also I kept thinking about like, am I reaching? Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't really sure where to land on it, even though I found that particular mode of reading the show so meaningful personally.
It's a really interesting question to think about, because when you create a show from scratch that's about animals and plant people and barking fanny packs, I mean, you could go any direction. And the direction they've gone is something that I think we should think about. And we are thinking about it. All of us are thinking about this show. And we want to know what you think about Tuca and Birdie. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will go wear some short shorts in honor of Tuca.
Yes.
And I will dig out my fanny pack. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you got a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about the new Peacock series, We Are Lady Parts.
I'm Gregory Warner, host of NPR's Rough Translation. The military helped launch Silicon Valley, but now they're kind of on the outs.
You're surprised that you look at me and say, no, that's not possible. Yes, it is.
And so it just dawned, this is just not going anywhere.
Stories of communication and miscommunication each week on Homefront from Rough Translation.